I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Scott Messer. Scott is the principal and coach of Sales Evolution. He's a business development professional, a serial entrepreneur. Scott has held various sales management, and executive positions at Union Carbide, American Camsol Corporation, Griff Machine Products Company, Ultimate Software Group, Dataflow Information Systems, CompuWare Corporation, and Growth Dynamics. His experience includes two turnarounds and two startups. Scott has helped these firms launch new products and services, establish sales territories, and raise capital. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
You have a really impressive background, and I suspect that you have some great tips to offer to our audience. Tell me a little bit about some of the themes that have been consistent throughout your career.
I would say that a couple of the themes that have been consistent through my career are that unless you are selling, you're starving your company of the mother's milk, if you will, to make it grow, and that genius is simply not enough. You've got to get out there, get your hands dirty, get out in the field, and make it happen, because that provides the basis for everything going forward.
Interesting. And how did you learn that?
Well, coming from a family business background, I came from it from the dining room table, if you will, and ultimately wound up taking over the family business and watching my father work, frankly, for many, many years, leaving early, coming home late from the road, doing the business side of it after hours initially, and through it all, growing a thriving business. I learned through that observation that sales are what make it happen.
Nothing quite like learning things close up.
Indeed. And great mentors. Everybody should have at least one or a couple through their career. It really does provide the inspiration and education to get you where you need to go, to get through those plateaus that you hit along the way.
Mm-hmm. Who have been some of your mentors besides your father?
Well, at Union Carbide, there were a couple of great sales managers that I worked under. Wally Enright is a name that comes to mind. A close friend of mine who I went into business with at Ultimate Software, Fred Leesong, was a tremendous guide. Very, very smart businessman. And frankly, the idea of surrounding yourself with people better than you are is a key success factor in any business. And so I try and take the best from everybody around me.
That's actually an interesting observation, surrounding yourself with people who are better than you are. Is that something that could make somebody feel threatened?
Of course it could. It shouldn't. We all have gifts, and none of us are gifted in all things. Therefore, it's really important to stay focused on your unique abilities and let those with their own unique abilities do those things that you are not as competent or conversant in. I find that by spreading yourself too thin, by trying to do too much, it dilutes your business. It dilutes what you can do. I think a classic example, David, is business owners that still, after all these years, still do their books. QuickBooks sells probably a million copies a year. I don't think it's an impossible program to learn, but why would I do that? there are plenty of people that are more competent to do it than me. And when I'm doing something that is not central to the purpose of my business, I am spending my time, my mind share, etc., on something I should not be spending it on. So I would urge most of the folks in your audience to shed the non-essential tasks to others, spend the money on the talent to do it, and they'll find that they make more money and more progress faster than they would holding on to these non-essential tasks.
Scott, have you had any experiences where you have held on to non-essential tasks and then suddenly delegated those tasks to other people and found that it was a huge relief?
In a past life, I probably did, but for the last many years, frankly, David, I have not. And again, when you let others do what they do best, it allows you to focus on what you do best. It comes down to this, I think, for a lot of people. Some people manage their business from an expense side perspective. And I think the people that grow their businesses the fastest, the best, are those that focus on a revenue side emphasis. You can expense side yourself right out of business. It requires you to stretch a little bit and to let go of some control. But if you think about having employees and people doing work for you, being they direct employees or outsourced, every hour they work, theoretically, they're making you money. So the more people you have doing their unique ability skill set, the faster your business grows and the better you do. I mean, right now, for example, I've got a group that does marketing for me. I certainly have a bookkeeper and an accountant. I've got several people on my team that have other skills that complement my own. I'm just one guy. I can't do it all. And I encourage your audience to identify the things they do the best and let the rest go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what are some examples of expense side perspectives that you've seen business owners struggle with?
Well, investing in training for their people, for example. Oftentimes, they think that they hire somebody for a particular job and they should be able to do the job. And when they make that hire, that is likely the case. But take IT for an example. If you've been in business for 5 years, 15 years, 20 years, I would imagine that the IT person that you hired, their skills were great when you hired them, but unless they have stayed up with the current and latest and greatest technology, they're way, way behind. That's affecting your business. You've got to invest in them to make sure that they can stay on top of things. Of course, being a hammer looking for a nail, I will talk about sales teams and not investing in educating sales management or training salespeople. The folks that, frankly, are the front line for your economic success. I'm not talking about leasing BMWs and expensive office space. That you have to watch out for. But if you don't invest in your people to make sure they're the best they can be, again, you're selling your own self short.
Hmm. Scott, what have been some of your biggest successes in business?
Great question, David. I measure my success by the success of my clients. And there's nothing better than seeing young companies grow. I can think of one client of mine in particular who, when we started, was working in a very small office with two other people. And over the last 10 years, now has close to 100, an international office, 4 offices in the States. A couple of those. There's nothing more thrilling than that. But also, there have been a number of established firms that were stuck or at a plateau or just were not achieving what the owner wanted them to achieve. And by putting some new energy and processes and excitement back into the people inside the business, it went off to a whole new level. There's nothing more exciting than that. We put so many self-limiting beliefs on ourselves, fill our heads with mental chains on things that cannot be done. And the real success is helping people break those chains and setting themselves free to do what they always could do, but feared taking the steps to move forward. It's interesting. So much of our work is psychological, even more so than process driven. And that's where the real success has come from.
Talk to me about some examples of some of these psychological roadblocks that people hit and barriers that I suspect people put up for themselves.
Indeed they do. And one of the easiest ones to describe, based on our work with sales teams, is if you think about what we do in life, we do a number of different roles. We have a family role, we have a friend role, a consumer role, a business role. Our life is filled with roles, one of which oftentimes is a sales role. The one role that most often defines people and defines their attitude is that sales role. And I find that very interesting. Somehow, when people put on their sales hat, it's like there's an Arctic chiller inside the hat, and it freezes their brain where they become a completely different person. And they behave differently. New fears come in. They don't want to be that guy, the used car guy, the insurance guy. And again, I'm not putting those folks down, because a great insurance salesperson is, wow. I mean, they're fantastic. But somehow people have a view or sense of sales that is just inaccurate, which leads them to behave in a funny kind of a way, when if they would just be themselves, because most people are nice people. We're socialized, good conversationalists, genuinely interested in helping. But somehow, when they put on that sales hat, they lose their perspective of the role they're supposed to play, which is really the role I think every human is supposed to play. How can I help you? How can I help you? That's really what sales is about. And somehow, people reduce it to thinking they need to trap, trick, close, etc. It's funny how their heads just get in the way of the role they need to play.
So
I hope that answered your
question. Yeah, and I was going to say, if I'm a business owner and my head is getting in the way of having the right mindset to want to help people, and that's my approach to sales, how do I overcome that block in my mindset?
That is the million-dollar question. And to reduce it to an easy concept, understand that you are playing a role, and that if you ever watch any of the great sales movies out there, Boiler Room, Glengarry, Glen Ross, Tin Men, Used Cars, Wall Street, there's just so many of them. It's interesting to watch the actor play the role of a business developer. They ask questions and they do things that the audience, when watching the movie, thinks, wow, that was awesome. That would really work, but I can't do that. And the question becomes, why do they say they can't do that? I believe the answer is a simple one. The actor has no economic interest in the outcome, nor an emotional investment in the outcome. The director says, lights, camera, action. The actor plays their part, says their lines, plays the role. Director says cut, and the actor goes back to the trailer. In real life, in real selling, that's not the case. Although, if you think about it, it is the case if you're playing a role. So one of the things that we coach our folks on are to set a couple of success traps for themselves, one of which is, before you pick up the phone to make the dial, or before you walk in the door at the client or prospect's office, just say to yourself, lights, camera, action. shift your mindset into a different place. And when you walk out, you can say to yourself, cut, and go back to being who you are. By removing the emotional involvement, it sets your mind free. I would say the second big tip I can give to folks, and this one's going to be a big hurdle for a lot of people, is that you've got to figure that the person you're speaking with is someone who is not going to buy from you. We need deals, sure, but we don't need this deal. What makes salespeople and business developers desperate is they don't have enough opportunity. They haven't created a rich enough referral pipeline, an introduction pipeline for themselves, that they have to get this one. Look, I've been in the position in startups where payroll was coming tomorrow and we didn't have the money and we'd better bring some business in. And we did, because we had to. You've got to work with that kind of desperation on the one hand, but the reality on the other hand, that if you have a rich enough pipeline, you will get deals. You can just be okay in sales and get deals. If your ratio is 1 out of 10, it's a question of how many 10s you go through as to how many 1s you'll collect. But if you only have 4 opportunities and your ratio is 1 out of 10, yeah, you're going to be emotionally invested in that outcome. And that's not a good place to be.
Yeah, that's a big shift for a lot of people.
Yeah, you've got to figure you're not getting this one. And when you take that attitude going in, it sets your mind free to actually listen, which is the number one attribute of top performing salespeople. They're great listeners. Because if you think about it, all of our products and services, including my own, are free. Yeah, David, you heard it right. Our products and our services are free. That is not what the prospect is buying. The prospect is buying a particular outcome from the goods and services that we provide. And it's a personal outcome to them, typically. For business owners, it can be getting the next generation in the business. Or it could be they've got a certain number of years before retirement. They've looked at their retirement account, and it's not there yet. It can be that their spouse is upset with them because of the overtime that they've been putting in, and they've been missing soccer games, and the kids are upset too. It can be any number of things, but they're all personal. Our work, our products, our services are merely the mechanics to the end that the prospect seeks. As long as we are there trying to sell our stuff as opposed to try to help them with what they are really looking to accomplish, of which, again, our products and services are merely the tools to get them that thing, we're focused on the wrong end of the equation. How can I help you? That is the most powerful question you can ask in sales.
Scott, what have been some of your biggest challenges in business?
There have been many. Being undercapitalized is always a problem. Of the various businesses I started up and ran, only one was based on bank funding, the Bank of Dad, I might add. The rest was strictly on cash flow, and it's hard to grow and invest in your business that way. Not impossible. Again, you've got to watch the expenses, but you've got to be revenue focused. The next, of course, is hiring top performing people. They're always in demand, particularly in sales. They're very difficult to find. And again, my own self-limiting beliefs. I have them too. It's probably everything that has been a challenge to me, David, are the same things that are going through the people's minds that are listening to the podcast right now. I think they're universal.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the self-limiting beliefs that you had that you've overcome?
Well, I would say first and foremost that it's difficult to start up a business. In reality, it's easy to start up a business. You can incorporate on LegalZoom in 15 minutes and with very limited investment, get a website going and a telephone line and start dialing. I thought there was a lot more to it than that. There really isn't. Another one, everybody has limits on who they're comfortable calling on, size companies, industries, etc. And that lights, camera, action thing was probably one of the biggest success traps I set for myself, and it really, really worked. Sometimes people can be intimidating that you talk to. You've got to get past that. For me, that's been difficult at times, depending on the size of the person, if you will. My limit, I don't have a problem calling company CEOs, owners, etc., probably up to $1 billion. But boy, when I get over the billion mark, hey, my knees still knock. I don't know why. They're no different than anybody else. that's just a great example of one.
Mm. And how did you overcome that feeling of the knees knocking?
You don't overcome the feeling. You know, there's a great quote, I'm not sure who said it, but successful people don't like doing the things that unsuccessful people don't like doing either. They just do them. And another success trap is, you know, I've never come back from a bad sales call where I found that the person I spoke to had burned down my house, shot my dog, kidnapped my family. I mean, it's just sales for crying out loud. The thoughts that we have in our head, the voices that we hear, are not the voices that our prospects are hearing. They don't know us. They don't know much about us other than what the referral source might have said or what they saw on our website or LinkedIn profile. It's the voices in our head that are holding us back. And we've got to shift from that 70-30 negative self-talk to positive self-talk and shift to 70 positive, working towards zero negative. It's hard. It is hard. But otherwise, we will not accomplish what we want to accomplish. How is it that right now, somebody from Boeing Corporation can be sitting in the CEO's office of a major airline talking about 100 jets worth 6 or 8, and he doesn't even have to say billion because they know. And yet so many of the people listening to this podcast, including myself at times, have had a hard time asking for 25 grand. If that guy can ask for 8 billion, I don't see why it's so hard to ask for 50,000. But our heads get in the way, and we've just got to retrain ourselves.
One of the comments that we get from people quite frequently is not just what's in their heads, but what they hear from people around them, from friends, from family members, from colleagues, when they're doing something that other people think is moving into uncharted territory. They hear a lot of naysayers.
Sure. And, you know, as the expression goes, a ship sailing close to the shoreline is safe, but that's not what ships were made for. Ships were made for sailing the ocean. You can be safe and not accomplish much, or you can take risks and accomplish a lot. In fact, frankly, people that don't make mistakes usually don't make much of anything. Again, I think the statistic is 1/3 of self-made millionaires went bankrupt somewhere along the way. You have a choice to listen or not listen. You have a choice to work towards your goal or work to somebody else's version of what your goal should be. It really comes down to that. How do you, again, get rid of that self-doubt? That's the hard part. And by the way, working with people like yourself and other coaches is a great way to get an honest and unbiased opinion of what's going on around you. Your family is emotionally invested in you. Your friends are emotionally invested on what's going on around you as well. I know that when I coach our clients on deals that they're working on, I've got no skin in the game, which means that I can give advice that whether they take it or not, that's their call. But it doesn't matter to me whether they win the deal or lose the deal. So I'm going to tell them what they need to hear, whether it's pull out or do this thing. Having a great counselor is very important to business owners. It's a lonely place to be.
It's a very lonely place. We hear that all the time. Scott, what are some examples that you might be able to share where you have seen business leaders overcoming self-doubt, and as a result, they have smashed through the plateau?
Gosh. People get past their self-doubt typically through experience. And if you imagine a three-ring bullseye, David, with the center bullseye, if you will, being the comfort zone, the second ring being the uncomfortable zone, and the third ring being the fear zone. Most people live in the comfort zone. That's that sailing the ship close to the shoreline. That's not stretching. That's staying with what's easy, comfortable, and practically unconscious. The people that grow the most and have really taken off personally are those that made a commitment to move into that uncomfortable zone and to stretch themselves. And what they most often find is that it was not such a big deal to get there, and it wasn't such a stretch to try these new and different things that, shockingly enough, worked for them. And when you stretch yourself and find out that these various things are working, it reduces the pressure to try the next thing and the next thing. Growing a business, growing yourself, it is like driving down a road. You hit a roadblock. You think, wow, this is a big roadblock. But somehow you get past it, only to find that there's another roadblock. Probably more difficult, maybe even bigger than the last one. But the road is perpetual and perpetually filled with roadblocks. We just have to get past one after another after another. But if you just deal with basic problem-solving techniques, you usually can get through them. And that's what builds the confidence. Getting through one, getting through the next one, trying something, it worked. Try something else, it worked too. And pretty soon, your confidence is much higher than it was when you originally started. That's my experience, and that's frankly what we teach the folks that we work with. It's just sales. It's okay.
Scott, what are some examples of some roadblocks you've hit in your life and your business career that seemed huge when you were facing them, but you got past them, and looking back, they seem way less daunting in hindsight?
Well, I would say number one that comes to mind, David, is in a small business, and we are a small business. We've got 5 people inside the company now, growing, adding people, but we're a small business. And I remember about 4 years ago, I had 2 people working with me. And at the time, it was me and them, and they decided to go off on their own. Losing key employees is brutal, and particularly in small organizations. I mean, 20 people probably are going to leave IBM today. Doesn't affect them. But if you're driving a small business, having a couple of key people leave or a key person leave is just a tremendous obstacle to overcome. It creates tremendous demands on your time, etc. So I would say that's probably been the biggest roadblock to overcome. Scaling up to critical mass. I would imagine a number of your folks are dealing with that issue right now as well.
Mm-hmm. And how did you overcome what happened when your 2 key employees left?
Oh, the traditional 20-hour days. the traditional going out to every account and making sure they stuck, and they all did. Because interestingly enough, and this is a key point to your folks to understand, from a sales perspective, it's the business relationship that comes first, the personal relationship second. And one mistake that so many people make is they believe it's the personal relationship that trumps the business relationship. And that is just not true.
How do you make sure that the business relationship comes first when you face a situation like you did with key employees leaving?
People buy, again, for their reasons, not yours. I'm sure you've had this experience. I'm sure your audience has had the experience where they hired a business developer because they had this great book, and ultimately they didn't bring anybody along. Or from the other side of it, you've had great relationships with any number of people that you never did business with. A good relationship is a nice to have, and if you develop an excellent business relationship with someone, you will likely develop a nice personal relationship. For example, in my line of work, we're not job for life. We come in for a period of time. It could be months or years, but eventually, if we do a great job, our clients will raise their hand and say, "Scott, thank you, but we're gonna swim on our own now." And that's great. And I have a great continuing personal relationship with those folks where they're continually providing me with referrals. If they hire somebody new and they want them trained, they'll send them through our program, et cetera. But the rationale for the business relationship is over. But I'll still make introductions on their behalf and introduce them to new products and services if I think it's in their interest. I have no skin in that game, but I'm maintaining the business relationship and maintaining a good personal relationship at the same time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it's great advice. It's really great advice.
Yeah, if you're not focused on the business side of it, you won't get the business, because your competition is made up of nice people too, and they have good relationships with these folks. It's one of the two most overrated aspects of business development, relationships.
Scott, what are you working on now that you're most excited about?
We just launched an online sales training program, which is very exciting for us. It's giving us scale and reach that we did not have before, and includes all the key elements, with the exception, of course, of live classroom programming. But our key distinguishing characteristic, the thing that elevates us, I think, over everybody else in our field, is that we're not one and done trainers. We coach the people in our programs extensively, individually, on the deals they're working on. And this online program is giving us the ability to get to people outside our immediate geography, to train them and then coach them, plus distributed sales forces where the management is not going to bring them in on a regular basis for training. It's just too expensive. They're not going to fly them in out of their territories for a couple of days. Plus, the ability to reach our current clients that hire new folks that are outside our territory and get them up to speed. So that's probably the most exciting thing that we have going right now. And it's early. Ask me in 3 years how we're doing with it.
On a different note, have you found that the ability for people to do business online in ways that they couldn't do business before has changed the nature of the way sales are done, or changed the nature of the way business is done?
Oh my gosh, yes. The days of the salesperson as bringer of information has passed. There's this thing called the internet, and I think it's going to stick. A recent study done by the Conference Board showed that by the time a business developer gets invited in to talk to the purchasing folks, they're 70% of their way through the decision-making process. So bringing brochures, spending the first 30 minutes talking about the history of your company, et cetera, that's a thing of the past. People don't have time for chit-chat anymore. And frankly, with the internet and telephony and all the various new ways to communicate, you don't have to go to your clients anymore or your prospects anymore. So much business is done over the phone and via email. It's a whole new way. I shouldn't say a whole new way. It's a continually evolving way that is at a point now where it's much, much different than it used to be.
Scott, unfortunately, we're coming close to the end of our interview. You know, we believe that one of the most vital elements to smash through any plateau in business or in life is to create a community of complementary people with complementary talents. And that's why we always end our interviews with this question. Who do you know personally that's currently doing work you're especially excited about, and why?
There is a new sales methodology, and in sales, there's really nothing new. I find it quite complementary to our own. It's called the Challenger Sale. I would encourage people to look up the Challenger Sale. It's a great book. Check it out. If you can implement some of it, that's great. Also, from a technology side, there's some terrific CRM or customer relationship management systems out there. In particular, Salesforce.com is doing some amazing stuff that become the industry standard, but they continue to add to their product. Microsoft is coming on strong as well in that space with their dynamic CRM. Those are a couple of things that jump to mind immediately, but search engine optimization, there are any number of companies. There's one, Seer, S-E-E-R, Seer Interactive, that's tremendous. They're not right for all companies of size, but if you're a large organization, they are the best. There's just so much going on in the space. It's hard for me to keep up with it, and I live in this space.
Well, that's great. These are great pieces of advice. Scott, thank you for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Scott Messer, who is the principal and coach of Sales Evolution. Thank you again, Scott, for joining us.
Thank you, David. It was a pleasure to work with you today.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.